Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on June 9th, 2022. The end of school is nearing for many of you, and for many of you, it already has ended. I congratulate you all on having, I hope, a good year and completing it and getting it done and taking a little break now or whatever. But congratulations to everybody. I think I'll say that every show from now on, because it is important. You guys had a tough year out there, and it gets crazier by the minute, which is what we try to calm things down here on Education Talk Radio and give you all the good things that are happening in education. And one of the good things that always happens in education is working with an educational service agency. How's that for a segue? Okay, but it's true. These are the hidden gems of education. And we've got Joan Wade here. Dr. Wade is the executive director of AESA, the Association of Education Service Agencies. And she's brought with her Mike Haynes, who works at, he's the executive director of the Cooperative Educational Service Agency, number 10 in good old Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And we're going to talk to them both about some services that are provided by ed service agencies that people don't know about. Okay, they're the unique ones, and we'll talk about that. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, just like we always do, ace-ed.org, the home website of our Consortium for Equity in Education. We have our new Excellence in Equity Awards program. You can see the icon over there. Click through. We have our big site on teacher retention, the educator shortage. That's at teacher-retention.com. Again, there's an icon. All right. We have SEL today. Okay, we're working with CASEL now, C-A-S-E-L. CASEL, we had a great show yesterday with them. You might want to check that out. So seltoday.org, and, of course, all the podcasts are over there, and our magazine, Equity and Access Pre-K-12, which is a pretty good issue, this issue that's up there right now. And, of course, we're working on our back-to-school issue as I speak. So it's all kinds of good stuff at ace-ed.org. And it's going to be good stuff today here on the podcast with Dr. Joan and Mike. Hi, Joan. It's Larry here.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be back with you. Thanks for having us on your show today.
You're always welcome here. You know that. And, Mike, you've been here before, right? Am I right?
I don't think so, but
no, I thought you were. Your name looked familiar to me. So in that case, let me welcome you as a first timer.
Yeah,
nice to be here.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me ask this important question: how's the weather in Chippewa Falls?
It is beautiful. It's sunny and it's 70, and you know it's like that every day, all year long.
Thank you, and just keep taking note. Are you taking your meds? Are you okay? Is everything all right? Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Put Chippewa Falls on the map of Wisconsin. Where is it?
Yeah, so if you think about just aim for the center of Wisconsin and then go to the left a little bit. We're about an hour and a half from the Twin Cities, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and if we go to the east, we're about 3 hours from Green Bay.
Okay, are you anywhere close to one of my favorite beers, Stevens Point?
We're about an hour from Stevens Point, yes. Of course, Chippewa Falls is the home of Leinekugels, so
thank you. I love Stevens Point, but I love Leinekugel. I used to live out in the Midwest. Okay,
yeah,
so thank you for telling us back. And now, Joan, are we going to tour the brewery today? Is that the purpose of the show?
No,
right.
I don't
I
think the brewery was on
Google.
Our agenda. And I will say that while some of our members might enjoy an adult beverage every now and then, they don't produce them. So on to ESA work.
Yes, Mommy. Okay. Okay. Forgot about Leinekugel. I apologize, Mike. So the two places that people visit when they go to Chippewa Falls is the Leinekugel Brewery and then also the Cooperative Educational Service Agency number 10.
Those absolutely.
Two big,
I think
the
in
two
the
big
other order.
Tourist points. Right. This is good.
First order. Yeah.
Joan, tell us about AESA, the association.
Yeah. Well, I'm always happy to talk about AESA. We have just over 500 members from across the country that are educational service agencies. They serve a region of their state, the public school districts within those regions, and a lot of them also serve private schools, and some of them even get into county government and city government. So, but their main client is public schools. They do a lot of special ed, a lot of technology support. They really keep the pulse on what the schools need. They work closely with the administrators and the teachers to find out what their needs are, and then they find a way to service those needs.
Yep.
So right now, big issues around equity, around mental health issues, both for the teachers in the building and the students. So a lot of work is being done around that. AESA has been around for about 45 years as a national association to meet the needs of the educational service agencies that are members. Different names in different states. There's about 20-some names, from BOCES to RESAs to CESAs to AEAs, intermediate units, and the list goes on. But what they do is all very similar in that they have diverse portfolio services for their clients, the school districts they serve, and they serve a region of the state with the exception of Alaska. There is one ESA in Alaska called CERC, and that state is so huge, and that one service center serves the whole state. So very interesting.
That is very interesting.
How's that?
Bring them on one time. That'd be a good show. But that's pretty interesting. Bring them on.
We just would need to schedule that a little later in the day because they're 4 hours different, you know.
I know. And we would do that. We would do that for them.
Okay.
And as the old joke goes, don't wait to hear from them. Alaska. Get it, Alaska.
That's right.
Thank you for feeding me that line. Okay. So, no, please, ask them on. This would be great. And by the way, Mike's ESA, and by the way, I have said this a million times, they are the hidden gems of education. And I hope everybody realizes how important they are. Okay. They do things that you couldn't do by yourself. In groups, from many, e pluribus unum, they really do a good job of working on technology and transportation, everything else. We're going to talk about some more before. But, Mike, yours is the Cooperative Educational Service Agency, CESA, number 10. And the first question is, are there any that are uncooperative? That's what I'm curious.
Not that I know of. We're all pretty cooperative here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you're it's co-op, all right? And just tell us how many districts you work with in particular, that type of thing. Just describe what you guys are doing in Chippewa Falls. Let me just give the plug home, and I'm sorry I forgot, of Lonnie Kugel, a great beer, but go ahead. A great beer.
Well, CESA 10 has 29 member districts, so in our region of the state, we have 29 of the 400 and some odd districts that are in the state, and so we provide services that we also work with dozens every year across the state, because several of our projects and services cross our regional boundaries. So, you know, I would say at any one moment we have contracts with 100 districts in the state, give or take. Just a great, great opportunity, as Joan said. You know, there's wonderful work happening, and it's great to be involved in that.
It really is. So 29 districts, and you're juggling 29 plates and making it happen for all of them.
Right.
Joan brought up a couple, but I just want to ask you, again, central Wisconsin, kind of north central Wisconsin, okay, what are the big issues? And I know we're going to deal with others, but what are the top things that are happening this year, that have happened this year? And by the way, are the kids out of school yet? They could be. I don't know. Mike?
Pretty much out of school. They're pretty much out of school at this point.
Okay. You know, so they're done. Yeah, what were the big issues?
I would say there's a handful. Certainly always on our radar is academic achievement, and especially reading and literacy. That's something I think that not only us, but I think every ESA, every school district in the United States deals with. So that's a priority ongoing. We hope we can provide resources to help every school continue to work on that. There's also, you know, in the past couple of years, it's been obvious to us that equitable outcomes is something we should focus
that's
on.
Nice.
So that's a big issue. And I would say, you know, there's a sentiment, you know, there's this maybe anti-establishment thing happening where, you know, schools and other leaders are being questioned and challenged by their communities and
yes.
folks. And so dealing with that and helping ensure that everybody recognizes the great work that's happening in all of our schools, that needs to be this number one story, not some of the other stuff that you're hearing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I would say those would be three things that come to mind immediately.
Have you worked a lot? We have a website, a resource center called seltoday.org. Okay, and I'm wondering how social emotional learning is fitting in this year, if it is.
Well, yeah, and actually, that I should have added that. That is a priority everywhere, and in particular, we're right now managing a pretty large grant to provide training to any adults that are associated with a school in the area of trauma. So we've had, in the past 4 months, we've had about 200 people trained in the neurosequential model, and we've got 2 more years to keep doing that. So that is
fabulous.
Something. So SEL, trauma, all that is pretty critical right now.
It really is, and I have to say something, and I hate to keep bringing it up, but I will. We had the horrors of Uvalde. I'll just leave it at that. Everybody's on edge from that in the education world. We were having a tough year, okay, before Uvalde happened, all right, and then that happened. And I just always say, and I'm glad you mentioned this, Mike, we always worry about social-emotional learning for the kids. And we can incorporate those things. That's about resilience and all confidence, all those sort of things, okay, that a child needs to grow up with. But we have to really be concerned, okay, with the emotional needs of teachers these days.
Absolutely.
And I know you said about adults, and I'm just glad you're working on that, Mike. It's good stuff, okay? It really is. So, I have a list here. You guys sent me a list of this, and I always think of ESAs with transportation services, special education, technology. And the reason is this, there's a lot of school, they're using 29 school districts, okay? And I bet some of those are fairly small, all right? They can't afford stuff, especially this day and age. But the power of a group purchasing organization, if I may, okay, and the negotiation power of 29 makes a big difference. And that's kind of what you do, right, Mike?
Correct, right. There's a lot of what we do, individual districts, just, they don't have the resources or the capacity.
Yeah.
Some of our districts are, below 300 students.
One
administrator. There's just none of us went to school to be a principal or superintendent and learned about, how to handle facilities issues or energy management or a whole host of things. So that's the great purpose that we can fulfill.
Yeah, and just out of curiosity, Mike, what is your background? Are you an educator? Are you a business person? Well, you're probably both now, but what's the background ESA?
Yeah, well, I started as a music teacher, then I spent a number of years as principal and then superintendent, and then being an administrator here at this agency was really the next step and next opportunity to advocate for teachers and leaders and students on a larger scale. So it's all education.
That's cool. What instrument were you a specialist in?
Trumpet. Well, every band director says how you get to learn every instrument. So play them all, but I wouldn't want to stand up in front of anyone and do it.
Has he ever played trumpet for you? Joan?
I've tooted my horn for her probably, but I'm not sure if I've...
Yeah, no.
Okay.
No.
Where was your...
But
yes.
I will say that Mike also has had experience in the state of Michigan, so he brings that to the Wisconsin CISAs, and that's always
cool.
It's always interesting when people cross state lines and work in another state, because I think that experience speaks volumes for some of the services he's able to bring to the schools he serves.
Thank
you
for saying that.
He sounds like a modest person. He doesn't want to toot his own horn. Bad pun.
Yeah, thank you, Joan, for bringing that up. I spent about 20 years in Michigan.
Where in Michigan, Mike?
All
over.
Central, really. Northern Lower. As a teacher and principal, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Traverse City region. That was
Traverse City. Well, Traverse City. Petoskey.
Yeah, so near there.
Yeah.
We're just off
Harbor
the top.
Springs.
And then, Yep, that was near us. And then we, well, East Jordan was where I was a principal and teacher.
Wow,
and
cool.
Then superintendent up in the Upper Peninsula. So if you know anything about Michigan's Upper Peninsula, you know, you can be in awe or you can wonder. It's a beautiful place. Beautiful place to be and great experience.
You're going to die laughing. The only thing I know about the Upper Peninsula, and I've never been up there, but my wife's uncle, who's long dead, served time up there at Marquette. Bad time. That's the family thought of the Upper Peninsula. And by the way, he deserved every minute he stayed there. Okay, so what can I tell you? That's really funny. All right, good stuff, man. Welcome to Wisconsin. All right, how long have you been in Wisconsin now?
This is my 10th year.
Congratulations.
10 years.
Cool. It's a good state. Okay, it really is. All right, let's get back to this here. All right. This I found very interesting, okay? And I want you to talk on each of these because I don't think a lot of people know about this. The ESA, your ESA, is working on, we'll go down the list here, construction management. You're actually working and negotiating with construction companies? That's great.
Yeah, well, we have several facilities, projects and services, and I could sort of talk through all of them, but construction management is one of them.
Go ahead.
In that case, our staff basically act as the project managers. We act as the construction superintendent, hiring the subcontractors, conducting inspections throughout the project. And as I said earlier, it's doing those things that most school personnel aren't trained or have the time to do.
Exactly.
So we can do that for them, and we can save them money because we're not doing it for profit. We're doing it basically at cost, and we do a lot of projects, and that's one of those projects we do statewide.
All right, let me ask you, is there a lot of school building, a lot of construction going on right now up there?
There is.
Over there?
I'm going to spitball this, but, you know, the year right after the pandemic, we helped districts pass referendums to do construction projects, and the running total of projects for that year for us was between $50 and $60 million, meaning that's how many, rooms or auditoriums or gymnasiums or boilers or whatnot were being installed. That was just 1 year. And again, that's helping those things happen so that districts can pay attention to the things that matter to them, which is teaching students and having a great learning
environment. They're educated. And you know, it's interesting you brought that up because on my list I want to talk about this. This is exactly what you said, is referendum planning. Okay, you know, schools, and I have to say this, I work a lot with NSPRA, the School Public Relations Association. Nice, great people. Barb Hunter runs that. And, one of the key things, for school districts is both internal and external communication. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And external communication has to go beyond the parents. Because the schools are in the whole community. It's supported by the real estate taxes, et cetera, of that community.
Right.
So people like me who don't have kids anymore in the school district still have to pay for it, of course.
Right.
And the reason for that is, which is important, A, it educates kids, and B, a good school district keeps your home values up. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but talk about that, and you know, I get all that, and I think that's great, but I never knew you guys were involved in this, and I don't know how endemic it is throughout all the ESAs. Joan can speak to that, but just talk about what you did for referendum planning. I love that.
Yeah, so I think we're one
that's
of the few that probably offer that, and it really connects to, of the six or seven other facility services that connects, because oftentimes we'll help a district with their referendum planning. When they pass it, then we're there to help them do the project. And, what simply comes down to the fact that we have team members that we hire that know the laws associated with school referenda. We have a marketing team and expertise to ensure that, districts have the highest likelihood of success. And I would tell you right now, our success rate is about 96%, meaning 96% of the districts we've worked with over the past several years have passed their referendum.
That's pretty good. I got to tell you, 96%, that's almost 100.
Almost.
Wow, congratulations. That's just great. What are the keys that go into that? What's the key?
Well, the key is, again, having experts who know the laws inside and out, who can advise school administrators and boards, what's reasonable in terms of their ask. Lay out a marketing plan.
Okay.
So it's to your point, making sure that the marketing plan doesn't just go out to the teachers that live in the community or the parents, but to everybody, every mailbox, every citizen. getting in front of township boards and other civic groups, and just ensuring that the story is compelling and motivating for anyone who lives in the community. And to your point, you know, a great school is going to attract families, and
absolutely
going to keep the property values up, and it's just going to make communities thrive. And so we're, again, that's one of the areas where we're just pleased to be able to be a part of that, and helping, you know, create a sustainable future for our local school districts.
Yeah. By the way, is your area growing, or what's the population kind of like?
Yeah, I would say pockets are growing. There's a town about 10 miles from our office here that has, you know, been off the charts for the past 2 or 3 years. I think the school enrollment has significantly increased. They're building houses and buildings, and so that's happening. We have,
wow,
you know, in some of our outlying rural communities, they're relatively stable, or maybe slightly, you know, the enrollment is dipping. I wouldn't say there's any significant decrease. I think during the pandemic, we saw kids leave school to do homeschool or online school, but then they're coming back. So,
And also,
and
we
have several other services that we offer around facilities.
Yeah, but I want to ask you something. You just brought something up, and I do want to ask this. Okay, you guys are a rural area, and I don't want to miss this point with ESAs. Okay, talk to me about how you're involved with broadband and access. You know, you mentioned equity before, okay, which we're very involved in. You know, and if you can't reach every kid, if they're at home or wherever, they can't do their homework, whatever the case may be, how are you guys involved with the technology side, the broadband, the access, however you want to say that?
That is an excellent point, and this region is a good example of some of the challenges that we have in our country. And, you know, we have cities, you know, we have districts that are large enough that have ubiquitous broadband access for every kid in every home. And then 10 miles down the road, we have communities that struggle to get that. And so the big gap during the pandemic especially was some students were having amazing virtual experiences engaging with each other and their teachers, while some had to do paper pencil stuff and assignments sent home by a school bus. So that's been an issue we've had for we have a large distance learning network, so we engage with district leaders from multiple districts about ensuring that students have access inside and outside of school. We have a local internet working consortium that basically ties, in our region, ties schools, government, you know, law enforcement, healthcare all together under this network to ensure that there's a, you know, some redundancy, ensure that there's, you know, access. But it's still, it comes down to, I mean, the economy of broadband is money, and it comes down to figure out how to get, you know, telcos and other folks in our small communities where there may not be a lot of users, but there certainly still is a need. I think about,
every kid deserves the right education. An equal education, without question. Okay, so did you guys tap into the ECF, the Emergency Connectivity Fund?
Yes, and we do a lot of E-rate actually. One of our services that we coordinate for our district, we have a couple staff members that spend a lot of time working with all of our districts or the districts that purchase a service to help them maximize their ability to access and utilize those. So we're talking millions of dollars every year of projects helping. So it's a great program and you know, something that, again, we're pretty proud of that we can.
You should be. It's good stuff, and I'm a big fan of E-rates and ECF money and all that sort of thing. Hopefully ECF money they'll get rid of the word emergency, just call it the connectivity fund. They can use it all the time.
Right.
Okay, I hope, but we'll see what happens. I interrupted you because you wanted to go down some of the other really cool things you're doing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, in the area of facilities, you know, some of the other things we do, we provide owner's representative services, which means working on behalf of a district, advising them on cost-saving measures, finding places in their contracts where there are or aren't necessary components, and basically, again, being their advocates. That would be, you know, we might not be managing the project, but we're looking at their contracts and being their advocate. And I would tell you that we've never we can't recall a time when we haven't saved a district the amount of our fee before a shovel hits the ground. For example, there was a case where a district was being advised by contractors that they need to buy this insurance for about $150,000 to cover some of the liabilities. And our folks were able to point out that they could add the same coverage to their current carrier for like $3,000. So, you know, right there,
wow.
Immediate savings that nobody would
wow.
have known, right? No one's gonna, we also do environmental health and safety, so things like lead testing, asbestos testing, radon testing, indoor air quality testing and mitigation. We help with required safety plans. We help make sure that their safety data sheets are up to date, and we provide training around all those things. So not a fun story about that. Not too long ago, we were working with a district that was having intermittent issues with lead in their water. And so we kept going back. You know, it would be there, and then they'd test again and be gone, and then it'd be there again. And so eventually our team traced it back to the city's water system and determined that every time the city flushed their lines, the lead made its way to the school's drinking water. So
A
case where, you know, helping connect the school and the community, it's, you know, it's not just an issue for the school. And so that's, again, when you find those things happen, you know, you feel like high-fiving one another that there's a finally
you're darn
a
right. You're from Michigan. I wish you had been there for Flint.
yeah. Well,
you know,
I think they're working on that. Another area we do in facilities is focus on energy. It's a program that is funded by our state's utility ratepayers and managed by our state's Public Service Commission. And basically, it provides incentives for energy users, which includes schools, to engage in efficiency projects such as replacing lighting or installing energy-efficient equipment. And part of running that, our program, one of the programs we created is called Renew Our Schools, in which our team sets up a school with tools needed so that students and staff can watch in real time their energy consumption, and then reward them when they reduce their usage. So it's a way to tie energy usage and sustainability into the curriculum or into a
Absolutely.
School club.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff happening there.
That's the way to do it. I have to ask, you know, you're talking about all these services. How many people work at the CESA? How many people work there?
At our agency, we have about 160. And, you know, that's large.
Wow.
That's a good size. We're not the largest,
but
we still are. That's a good size.
I have to add, Joe, maybe you can – oh, wait, I'm interrupting you. You go ahead, Mike. Finish up. Go ahead.
Well, as I was going to say, when I'm talking about facilities, we have about 45 folks of those 160 that are working in facilities, engineers, marketers, coordinators, et cetera.
That's pretty impressive. I got to tell you. And Joan, is this CESA number 10 is in Wisconsin? Is this an outlier? They're doing a lot of stuff that you and I, in all the shows we've done, haven't talked about a lot. Okay, is this an outlier, Joan?
So it is a bit of a unique service that CESA 10 offers around facility management and the energy savings programs. There are a few across the country, but not many that offer that service. That the size of the CESA, it just varies. They're so diverse across the country. There are some educational service agencies that have 5 employees and some that have 3,000 employees.
Well,
so just like school districts, it varies in size depending on the need. But for Wisconsin, Mike's right. He's one of the larger CESOs in the state, and he is the only one that does the type of services that he offers.
Yeah.
But on top of what he's talked about, he also has the same special ed services, professional development services.
Right, exactly.
So they do the, you know, focus on the education pieces, but so helpful to schools to have this expertise. So he not only serves the schools in his region with that, but they go beyond their boundaries and offers that to schools across the state as well.
Oh, well, I think that's great. And Mike, I want to ask this, and you are a real good leader in this. How are you guys funded? Is it funded from the 29 school districts? Does money come down from the states? Are you like in business and selling your services to the school districts? How does it all work?
Well, yeah, in Wisconsin, CISOs, cooperatives do not receive any direct school aid or state aid. We do receive monies from, you know, state and federal money for specific programs like IDEA and Perkins, and
right.
those do flow through us. But primarily, you know, we exist based on fees that we charge for the services. So member districts, our member districts pay a small membership fee, and then they pay, you know, an a la carte fee basically for each service that they purchase.
I think that's cool. And how did in your particular case, who starts this? Is it the school districts who get together, or is it a group from AESA who decides you need one in central Wisconsin there? Who started? And Joe, maybe you know better than Mike, so I'll ask you, Joan, and if you don't, I'll ask Mike. How did it all start for this one?
So interesting, in Wisconsin's story is not unlike a lot of states where they used to have county offices of education, and the county superintendents were really in charge of education in the state. However, many, many years ago, 50-plus years ago, the decision was made by the state legislature to form these regional educational service agencies that could support the work between the State Department of Public Ed and
yes.
the local school districts. And so they started with 18 CISAs in Wisconsin. I believe that's the number, Mike, 18. And then they consolidated down to 12. And they've been a consistent 12 for, I think, since the early 80s, or even before that, for quite a few years. So they really were set up in state statute as far as their governance structure, their funding mechanisms, what their purpose is. And that's not unlike many states. They're set up in state legislatures to be a quasi-governmental organization.
Yeah.
So they're really, it's so interesting to me because they're really running a business, but
exactly.
they have an education background that they're
exactly.
bringing to the business as they're trying to meet the needs of the schools.
I think it's fascinating the way it gets started. It's fascinating what you have to do because, Mike, I hate to say it this way, but because the problem, I do this too, but you have to be a salesperson. You have to sell those services to the schools, yeah. And, I mean, they recognize these are solid professional services, but you still have to sell the services to the school. I think it's fascinating. Thank you, Joan, for that little background there. Mike, I want to swing over to two things, but let's see if we can cover them. First of all, you're facilitating one of AESA's online communities, Galvanized Cultures. I got a note here. What is that? What are you doing?
So as Joan has probably talked about before, there's several online communities that provide a great opportunity for members to share, you know, across the country, to share ideas, to network. And, given everything we've been through, it just dawned on me that, you know, we need to create a space where leaders could share strategies that have worked in their ESAs around building culture and motivating employees. And it's always been important, but again, the changing nature of how we work today, remote, fast-paced, et cetera, it just makes it essential that we keep our employees' wellness, happiness, and ability to feel that their work is purposeful at the forefront. So I wanted to create a space to have that kind of dialogue, and Joan was so gracious to let us do that. And so it's been fun to see that launch, and we've had a few conversations. We've done some Zoom meetings, inviting anyone who wants to be a part of that to talk about culture. Still in its infancy, I would say, but it certainly is nice to talk about that rather than some of the stuff you could talk about on a daily basis.
Yeah, it might be an infant, but I want to make this clear. I was an infant once, and look how wonderful I grew up. This is working out great. Okay? There you go. Now, I say that in all modesty. I grew up, and I became modest as well. Okay? But that is great, okay? And it's excellent to share that sort of stuff. It really is these days. It's incredible. And also, now I want to get into a nitty-gritty for a few minutes here with you as we wind down, and that is equity. Okay, you brought this up a couple of times, all right? We are the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We're the ones who produce this podcast, All right. It's so important. Of course, it highlighted during pandemic, and we don't want that to fall by the wayside. You want to talk about that? You're on.
Yeah. Well, we we all recognize, I think you as well, that the systems, the policies, the way school is done, really hasn't changed a lot since the industrial era. So
yes.
a lot of the things that still exist. In our policies and in our systems, isn't serving all students. So we started, a year ago July, we launched, well, it started actually a year and a half ago, envisioning what we could do. We created a service that would help schools address in a sustainable way the complex problems of equity, opportunity gaps, and preparing students for participation in a global economy. And to be clear, we're not just talking about race. I mean, we believe areas of inequity
exist
with
gender,
yeah. ability, socioeconomic status, language, geographic location, the broadband piece, that's a huge one.
Absolutely.
So because it's our mission to help schools address barriers that have resulted in these inequitable outcomes. And so we're enthused about the work that we've started and enthused about where I think this is going to go.
Well, we would love to help you. Look at what we do over at ace-ed.org. If we can help you editorially or whatever you want, we'd love to help you do that. That's a great goal,
great.
I think. Okay, tap in. As Joe knows, tap in. We always love working with you guys. It's a sincere invitation. Okay, and you should proud of yourself for doing that. And it's hard for these school districts. Okay, you got 29 districts, and believe me, I know they're of different sizes. And a lot of them are very rural, like you said, from 300 to 3,000, okay? And that's if you got a 300-kid school district, you don't have a big, huge tax base to work with, okay? And that's why I love what you guys do, the pluribus unum, from many one. It's great. Mike, you're doing a good job out there. Let you and I stay in touch. I love this. Okay, this is good. It's really fascinating. Joan, you picked a good one. This guy's great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we have a lot of great members, and Mike is quite the leader that I'm very proud of.
Right, and he drinks Leinenkugel, I'm sure. When he drinks, of course, he doesn't actually drink. He observes. He observes Leinenkugel. And tell your Chippewa Falls friends. I think I've actually been there. Okay, that I did not give them an insult by bringing up Stevens Point. Okay, both excellent beers.
Absolutely.
Mike, are they okay?
Yeah.
Stop by the
next time you're here.
Yeah, well, good stuff, man. Okay. Hey, thank you both. This is great. And by the way, I have to thank you both. You were supposed to do the show a couple of days ago. I wound up having to get a root canal, so I appreciate you switching it to today. Mike, thank you. Joan, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Always good to be with you. Have a
great
summer ahead.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk. Be good. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you both.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was cool. We learned a lot. Mike Haynes, quite a leader there. Okay, it's Cooperative Educational Service Agency. That's what they call them in Wisconsin. CESA number 10 in the home of Leinenkugel beer, which is a damn good beer. Okay, I forgot about that. Okay, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Okay, we'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Check what we're doing with our Excellence in Equity Award, since Mike brought it up. Check it out, Mike. Okay, Excellence in Equity. Awards are highlighted over there. Our podcast, our magazine, okay, our SEL Today. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody.